there's this great comic where it's three panels, and the first panel is these two people saying, our field has been struggling with this problem for years and years. And a third person comes in, and he's like, I'm here to solve your problem with algorithms. They're staring blankly, and then it's like, wow, this is harder than I thought. I think that perfectly encapsulates the experience of everyone who tries to come into the space and says, I'm going to fix everything and I'm going to do it right away. I'm from Silicon Valley and I'm going to save the day.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. Mike Sager came by my house the other day and we chatted at my kitchen table. Sager has a decade and a half of work now in progressive politics and political technology. We've intersected on some of that because he worked for me in client services early in his career at what was then NGP Software, and then had a stint at the pre-NGP Van, working with Mark and Jim, and then the post-merger NGP Van for about a year. But he's also been at places like the AFL-CIO and Pico National Network, so he has a bunch of relevant experience. And it's good to see that Mike has risen to be the chief technology officer at Emily's List, the powerhouse political action committee dedicated to electing pro-choice Democratic women to office. Mike loves to talk about security and politics and has a way of talking rather expansively on most subjects, so I took the liberty of condensing the interview down a bit. I trust that it represents the conversation fairly, however. In any case, after a quick word from our sponsor, my interview with Mike Sager at Emily's List.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Nathaniel.
Would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Sure. I'm Mike Sager. I am presently the Chief Technology Officer at Emily's List. I've been there for a little over 2 years now, which as I dive into my brief biography, you'll see is, as my wife said, something of a lifetime for me staying in one place. I have been in and out of the different aspects of the technology part of the progressive movement and Democratic campaign space for 15 years, which is sort of a weird thing to think about. I am a veteran of the DNC, AFL-CIO, NGP, Van, and then NGP Van, and a few other places along the way, Pico National Network, and I also spent a little while at Burson Marsteller, which is a big corporate entity and was sort of the where people who used to work in politics go to make more money. So,
I think it's a career worth exploring because you know, there's a lot of people who nowadays are interested in technology and politics on the progressive side. And for those few people who would listen to this and don't know, what is Emily's List that you're at and what's your role there exactly?
Sure. Emily's List is an organization dedicated to electing pro-choice Democratic women. People who are running for state and local offices, all the way up to people running for various federal offices and statewide offices. And so we do a lot of work both around fundraising with them and then also do a lot of candidate training work and provide just a lot of resources with our advisors team for the women who are running for office. And so it's been an extremely successful organization. Ellen Malcolm, who's one of the founders of the organization, likes to show a chart that shows the number of women in office by year. And then you see the line where Emily's List is founded. And then that line just shoots way up.
I interviewed Ellen on video years ago, and it makes me think actually I should take the audio out of that and make it an episode on the podcast. Yeah. But early money is like yeast.
Early money is like yeast. It makes the dough rise.
Yes.
The organization has always tried to get in with candidates early, get their fundraising kicked off. And all of that is sort of the kind of aspects of the work of the organization that I don't spend a lot of time doing.
Well, how big is the enterprise now? At one point, it was the largest PAC or close to the largest political action committee, but
we as a whole have probably 60, 70 people during the off year. And then we can be as big as like 120 during odd, even numbered years for odd cycle staff. So.
And what does a CTO at Emily's List do?
I'm the chief technology officer, but I'm also the chief information officer. I'm also the chief security officer. And so all of those things are part of my purview. So we have limited outward-facing technology properties, the website and stuff. But then we have a couple of other applications that I can talk a little bit about that my team supports. And then a lot of my work is sort of the internal-facing work of the organization. And a lot of it is frankly, the really boring business of business stuff, but that you have to have a functional organization. So, making sure people have things like computers and printers and working phone plans and are working all in a secure fashion and trying to make sure that technology ultimately is a tool and an asset to an organization and doesn't become a barrier or a stumbling block.
To what degree does Emily's List have technology that helps campaigns or helps you help campaigns?
We have the Emily's List Training Center, which is at trainingcenter.emilyslist.org. And the Training Center is a set of resources for pro-choice Democratic women who want to run for office, who are just starting out, and trying to provide them with elements of resources and training in an online setting so that they are able to get, even if they don't have a chance to necessarily get themselves physically to an Emily's List training, or they want to have a lot of the different pieces and information in a centralized place, it's a tool that we developed. It's fundamentally a training site, and we used the Duolingo for campaigning as sort of the metaphor and trying to create a experience that was really user-friendly and easy to navigate and made sense to someone who was running for office. And there's just a ton of good resources on there.
Do many candidates actually use it?
The goal of it is for people who are not, like, if you're running for like a local election, so like a city council race, or you're running for a county board or all those kinds of things. There's so many different offices in this country to run for, and that's where people get their start. And so we've tried to tailor that experience of the training center to that particular set of folks running for office. I think it's been extremely successful. We've had a bunch of people on it, and it's a good partner tool to the in-person trainings that our incredible national organizing and training team does at the organization.
What other web properties does Emily's List have?
We have a Where Can I Run tool, which is at wherecanirun.emilyslist.org, that tries to maintain a up-to-date list of different offices that people can run for. So you can go in and plug in your home address and then be able to see what different offices you could potentially run for.
So you came into this job, I guess, a couple of years ago, as you said, and, yep, and so you are starting to get the hang of it. What did you come into, and what, sure, have you changed in your time there?
So organizationally, Emily's List didn't have a CTO before. They've had a long-running tech staff, and a couple of the folks on my team are some of the longest tenured employees at the organization, which is actually something I'm really, really proud of. As an organization, it had never been... There had been a long-running technical staff, but tech was never really a focus of the organization. And so changing the technology leadership role of the organization to being a CTO and trying to change what the purview was and bring in both an upgrade of the infrastructure and I can talk a little bit about that just in general, but then also trying to increase the use of data within the organization, change how data is managed at the organization. And then the 2016 election cycle and the security issues that came out of it obviously served as a very large wake-up call just across the whole progressive movement about vulnerabilities. And many, many organizations took a look at what happened and asked themselves, where are our vulnerabilities? How can we be doing this better?
And it may be that we lost the presidential election
by
being hacked.
I believe we absolutely did. Yeah. And I think, though, it is important to recognize that cybersecurity issues and the questions around it are not unique to politics, and that many, many business entities and large organizations of all types wrestle with this, and that even though what happened in 2016 was driven by a foreign actor, there are just as many different damaging things that can happen to an organization just from more criminal, not necessarily politically targeted hacking, cybersecurity type of issues.
It's pretty annoying that when you're running an organization, you're trying to elect more Democratic pro-choice women, you're trying to operate in the, it's a complicated enough task that you have to attend to these sort of things.
Yes.
But if you don't, something bad could happen really could hurt your mission. So you have
Absolutely. It is both something that I've tried to keep a focus on within our internal organization, as well as the candidates that we work with. And I try to make my team be a resource and provide information to our campaigns department for them to be able to take back to the different campaigns that they work with and talk about the different aspects of cybersecurity and what happens if all of your files are located on one computer and you get hit with ransomware and all of your campaign plans, all of your data, et cetera. And you know, software as a service and stuff like that goes a long way to mitigating some of those risks, but there are still significant risks for users that if they don't understand what they need to be doing, it can create a very, very bad situation for them.
And you had done some work right before taking the Emily's List job, trying to sound this alarm.
Yes.
Something you had called Progressive Security Corps. What was that?
So Shauna Daly, who is another former DNCer and my former neighbor, a good friend of mine, Shauna and I tried to spin up the Progressive Security Corps right after the 2016 elections. And the focus was we were hoping to try to create a body to act as sort of a security operations center for the progressive movement, but more specifically for political campaigns. Neither of us had much of a background in fundraising and organizational development. And so while the importance of the work we were trying to do itself, I think, is still very much there, and there's definitely a need within the space for folks to act in that kind of role. We just encountered difficulties that anyone who was trying to spin up any kind of startup was going to run into.
And you were trying to do that as a nonprofit.
We were trying to do it as a nonprofit. The thought was that we would work with a few funding partners and then create this entity that would be able to be essentially a C4 clearinghouse of this kind of information. If you're running for office, your focus should be on getting as many votes as you can, and you shouldn't have to be worrying about the infrastructure that of security that goes along with it. And we were hoping to provide that.
Did anyone else come into that space? Did anyone try that in a different model?
There's some folks who are still looking at doing that. Robbie Mook is looking at, had been working with the Belfer Center, and which the Defending Digital Democracy Project came out of. And they're...
I chatted with him about that a little
bit. Okay, yeah, right. I know that they have an approach to that.
Do you have a sense if the other side is behind or in front of us on that?
I don't have like a network or really any insight necessarily into whether they're doing it. I will say as an American, I hope they are. There have been multiple different times in press and media where there have been allusions to the fact that the Republicans had the same issues. It's just that they didn't have their emails published on WikiLeaks.
Yeah. When you're in this role, a CTO at Emily's List, a kind of a flagship group on the progressive side, are you interacting with the chief technology officers at other like-minded organizations much? If you are, mm-hmm. you're nodding your head.
Yeah.
How does that take place? What kind of convenings? How do you talk to each other and how do you share information?
Right now, it's a fairly informal structure. Like, we do talk to each other and we try to talk to each other about best practices and things of that sort.
I'm always interested in how we as progressives organize ourselves and how how do we get better at what we're doing?
Yes, we do communicate with each other. I think that some of those sort of finer details of how we communicate with each other is not something I necessarily want to publicly talk about. But the DNC has Bob Lord as chief security officer. Bob comes from Twitter and Yahoo. He led the incident response to the Yahoo hack a few years back and tried to work with him. Are some partners at Microsoft, some partners at Google, and different places to do our best to share information with each other and be aware.
One of the types of guests I've had on this show, political tech entrepreneurs that have built sometimes tools that are useful to campaigns. And I imagine that they look at an Emily's List and say, can we talk Emily's List into sharing this tool with their campaigns because we think it'll help win? How would they approach you, or are you the right person to approach?
We have certainly done that in the past. There's actually a program we've done with NGP Van called Emily's List Plugged In that does do that. There have been other folks who have approached us about doing that. And I absolutely take a look at it and what the product is and what, what makes sense. Because there's a ton of stuff out there right now. We'll be curious to see sort of where the DNC goes with stuff like the I Will Run program and the different tool marketplaces there. What I don't want to do is be duplicative of the other efforts of folks within the space, that my resources are finite. And so while I want to make sure that we are providing people and create access to infrastructure that will help people win, I see value if there's something unique that we have to offer within that context, or if I can provide something a little bit better from us as an organization.
Well, if you were advising a particular campaign now, which you're not, but you're probably a resource to Emily's List sort of clients, I don't know what you call them, where would you advise them to go to find information about what technology is successful in helping you win a campaign?
So, that's a great question. I haven't thought about that much, because the questions.
They say that an interview is good when it makes someone think out loud.
Because the questions I often get are much more of a, should I use this tool, or is this tool secure?
Maybe you ought to move a little bit more into because winning is ultimately the game.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. And no two campaigns are the same. There are a fundamental set of things that you need when you're running for office. Presumably you're raising money.
Typically you need to track your donors in one way or another, or help yourself with fundraising. But even that is there's different fundraising streams, online and offline. So it's a complicated, I think it's a daunting world to be in, to be a campaign and often under-resourced, trying to figure out what is the stack of technology that I ought to be based on if I'm a U.S. Senate campaign versus if I'm a city council campaign or something in between.
Absolutely. And we do provide some guidance on the very general sense of how do you get an email system? How do you get file sharing? Like that really sort of commodity, not political specific stuff. We have a document that we are sending around to different campaigns that has a whole bunch of different recommendations on it. I've written shorter versions of it in 2017, 2018. The 2019 version tips the scales at about 17 pages and has a lot of very specific recommendations in there. But that is very much in the sense of
if this isn't your core thing because you're working on other stuff, where does somebody go?
Where
does one of your clients go?
The questions that we usually get are the questions of, I've been pitched by this organization, do I need this? And our campaigns advisors, they all come out of campaigns, they've worked in campaigns, they understand you need to have fundraising tools, you need to have a voter file, you need to have a website, you need to have online infrastructure. And so for those pieces, our campaigns advisors already know the different folks and the different players, and they are going to make their respective recommendations. It's when we start to get into the question of the add-on stuff beyond that's where it becomes so much harder, because every campaign is different. A campaign that is very online centered and it makes sense for them to use a online driven outreach program like a voter circle or something like that is going to have a different set of needs than a campaign that is running a much more offline in person program. If it's an Emily's List campaign and they're trying to figure out more things to do, they work with their campaign's advisor to figure out what they should be doing, what they should be adding. And then oftentimes when it gets into the more specifics of a technical piece, like, should I use this? Should I work with this? That comes up to my team. We work with them around it and figure, and help drive them to a custom solution.
But it doesn't sound like that runs through the CTO.
It runs through the camp through that team, and then they'll come to my team for stuff. And I do answer those questions frequently, but it's usually much more specific and case by case.
Well, what else would you like to talk about in your current role at Emily's List that you think would be interesting.
I'm a big advocate for WebAuthn FIDO2 security keys, which are a physical device that act as a second factor.
For the uninitiated.
Yes. That,
I'm assuming that that means I want to log into my computer or something. Mm-hmm. I have to have a device near me to make sure that it's really me.
Yes. So the concept of two-factor is...
And if I don't have this device, I can't get it. So what if I lose my device?
So that's actually, this comes up. The whole point of the device is that you have to have it. And so there are, depending upon...
You hang it around your neck or something?
I treat it like my house keys.
Yeah.
So like...
Put it on your keychain?
Yeah, put it on my keychain. Yeah. So, and you know...
How far away to the... Does it have to be? Do you have to get it out of your pocket?
Yeah, you get it out of your pocket. Well, it depends on the device. So, and depends upon what you're trying to do, where you're trying to log in. So there, you know, two-factor, the concept is something you know, which is your password, and then something you have. And traditionally that's been, your phone, and then you receive there's a text.
And a code.
Yeah. Or a code or
but maybe that's not as secure as it seems.
No. And especially with the text. So
somebody can listen into that.
It can be intercepted.
So why am I doing that all the time?
It's better than
Amazon sending me something and, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's much better than nothing.
Yeah. But you need a fairly sophisticated person to.
Not at all.
You just need someone running a particular program.
It can be intercepted by. There are a couple different ways that SIM.
I don't like talking to security people.
There's this look I get when I start to dive into the security stuff and I'm presenting before people where just like the color drains from people's faces.
And then we don't do what we're supposed to do.
Well, it depends. And some folks do. And some folks like.
On your staff at Emily's List, what percentage are doing all of their logins using a hard key?
We will be at 100% very soon. We are working very hard on that.
And then what about all of the Emily's List campaigns?
That's
your responsibility.
I'm not even going to go there.
Yeah.
The thing I will say is I am very heartened to see that a number of the presidential campaigns this cycle are doing this.
You know, I want to explore with you just for a second your career, at the beginning, because I want to understand why a guy is so interested in politics and technology and where that came from. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Northern Virginia. So I grew up just a few miles east of Dulles Airport. And I went to public schools. Then from there, I didn't do a senior year of high school. Instead, I started at a local community college. And I started interning at the Kennedy Center, the Performing Arts Center. And I had been doing technical theater since I was about 14. This was something that had been a core interest of mine. And I said, I'm going to do lighting and stage. And I mixed sound for some bands and stuff, too. I played in bands. I still play in bands.
My cousin has a whole career in big lighting.
Yes. So
it's very fascinating thing.
It's actually, I love it. I still love it. So I went to college for that. I went to Full Sail University, which is in Orlando, and the programs they had at the time, they only did associate's degree programs. So I did an associate's degree there. And the focus that I did was on stage lighting. And so I was started, at age 18, 19, I would work with local bands and they would play at like the House of Blues down there. I did a little bit of touring. There's a point in, I think, 2002, where I was flying back and forth to the Caribbean every other week to light reggae bands and festivals in St. John. And I would go
fly out. Doesn't sound like too bad of a lifestyle.
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't really matter. I was in St. John and the weather was nice. All I saw was the airport, the hotel room to sleep, and then the venue.
But you did that for a bunch of years.
I did that for about 4 years. Yeah. And when I was 18 in the DC area, I worked with the Stagehand Union IOTC Local 22 as a referral member. So I'd get calls and I would go and they'd send me to the Kennedy Center. They'd send me to what is now the Capital One Arena. I would do stuff at what's now Jiffy Lube Live out in Bristow. And I'd go all over and be a stagehand. I would be usually on the lighting crew, occasionally on one of the other ones, but I would go and do all the setup work, and it was great. In retrospect, extraordinarily physically taxing, hard work, but I had a lot of fun doing it.
And how'd you move into politics?
You know, my family, like, we always watched the news. We watched the morning shows. Like, my father would set up televisions, and back when they were not, you know, flat screens, but he'd bring in on election nights, he'd have three TVs in the kitchen so that he could watch all three networks and their election coverage. And it was just something that we did and we talked about as a family. And in late 2003, right as the Dean world was starting to heat up, I went to a Dean House party that a friend of mine had thrown. And so I ended up doing a little bit of volunteering there for Dean. And then, you know, Iowa caucus, everything ends up dropping out. And so then I started making myself available to the folks on the Kerry campaign and specifically the regional for Central Florida. And the thing there was, when I was working a lot at that point with the Station Union in Orlando doing corporate shows around the convention center. And so I'd go and I'd be the lighting director. I worked with a couple of lighting designers. I would go in and I would light a particular car as part of the wider booth of a major automaker at the car show and that kind of stuff. And so the season was always basically like about September to April or May, and then it gets too hot. And so it sort of dies off. And so I've done the season. Now I'm going to go and I'll spend some time volunteering. And so I said, look, you know, I can do computer stuff. I can help you out with this stuff. And they said, sure. And so I started just doing sort of like, as a volunteer, the internal IT stuff for the I-4 office of John Kerry. And I was 22 and I was just doing it. And then they just kept giving me more stuff to do. I canvassed a little bit, although not much. And then after that, as the summer starts to end, I'm like, all right, well, I got to go back to work. And they're like, well, we need you. I'm like, okay, well, you're going to have to pay me something to be here. And so they started paying me. And so they put me on staff of the Florida Democratic Party, the coordinating campaign. And
suddenly you're a professional.
I'm a professional political operative.
Political technologist.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah.
And that's the start.
And so I did that, did through the election, and I was crushed when we didn't win. And I remember at one point on election night, I turned to my regional. I was like, hey, Tony, are we going to win this thing? And he said, nope. A few years later on another campaign, I had someone ask me the same thing, and it was not a winning campaign. I just looked at them and said, no, we're not going to win. And then it was just as crushing to be on the other side of that too. So,
and then in 2005, you did some Virginia work?
I decided at that point, I was like, I like the people I met in politics. I find them interesting. I like this work. I think there's some cool, unique stuff I could be doing here. And I was like, I'm going to jump on another campaign and I'm just going to see where this goes. But at that point, Tim Kaine was running. He was the lieutenant governor. He was running for governor of Virginia. And I applied to work on the campaign. I got a job as a paid canvasser for Tim Kaine. And I knocked for 5 days a week, 6 days a week. And I burned out. I hated it. I hate knocking on doors. I'm good at it, but I knocked on so many doors, and that was right around the time I applied for a job with you. So,
and you applied to do client support for my political software company.
Yep. Right?
And I remember you walking the hallways on the phone. And
yep.
What did you learn from that?
It was extraordinarily educational. Because my job was to talk to campaigns to help them understand the campaign finance software. But because campaign finance is very niche, it's very specialized.
So you're basically help people fill out their federal or state election commission reports and use the software for other things that they used it for.
Absolutely. And so I would train people how to use the software. I would run through it. I would help them with different technical issues. We'd troubleshoot issues. And then I think it was probably early 2006, I think you acquired a voter file software. You know, just because I had done campaign work, I did more of the support for that.
You start to see technology in campaigns from a couple different angles.
Yeah. And Dodd taught me a lot of stuff about
being the IT director,
taught me a ton of stuff about managing infrastructure, IT infrastructure, and things like that. And so I would go with him to the colo from time to time, and I'd image machines, I'd image, and I would help him out with some of that stuff too.
So this kind of moved your career along that same path that had been developing and that connects to today.
Absolutely.
And the next thing on your resume, I think, was a voter file manager for Virginia.
Yes. So what happened was, after 2006, we had the good cycle, I was getting a little itchy, and I was like, maybe I'll go manage a campaign. So I emailed a person I knew who I knew was working in Virginia. I knew her from 2005 and the cane world. And I said, hey, are there any races coming up that you could use me for? And she replied back, actually, we're going to have a deputy position to do voter file stuff and tech stuff at the state party. Would you be interested in that? So in Virginia, the main thing was I wrote a manual for the van, and software manuals can be extraordinarily boring. So I put a lot of jokes into it. I had a little dinosaur icon in there, and I just put as many puns and jokes as I could.
The van being the voter activation network, voter file managing software.
Yeah, and that underpins Vote Builder at the DNC. And so I wrote that, and I was asked to send a copy of it to some folks up in DC. And then all of a sudden, everyone from all over the country is emailing me, can we use your van manual? Can we use your van manual? And so we ended up sending it around, letting folks use it.
It seems like van maybe should have had a manual.
Sure.
But now they did.
Yes. And so then the DNC, after the 2007 state Senate elections, I started talking with the DNC voter file team. They were sending around my manual. And so they said, do you want to come up here and work for us up here?
And what I like about this, just to intercede something, is it's in a career, sometimes it's that one little extra thing that isn't really that much effort, but opens doors and changes trajectories. And so just by taking the time to do this one thing, suddenly it's useful to a lot of people and you're more valuable.
Yes, that is exactly what happened. And so I moved back up and I went to work at the DNC, and I was the van administrator at the DNC. So I started working closely with all the 50 state parties.
And who are your bosses there?
So I worked for Katie Allen and then Josh Handler and Ben Self. And I think both Josh and Ben have both been on the podcast.
Cool people.
Yes. And so I worked for them, and it was all underneath. It was Dean's DNC 2008 cycle. I ended up being the traffic cop on van access between all the different presidential campaigns through the primary, and then started working really closely with the Obama team. I jokingly referred to myself as the fifth Beatle for the Obama data team, as far as for supporting van, things like that. And worked closely with Luke Peterson and Ethan Roeder, Doug Taylor, and Warren Flood, and all those folks out in Chicago, just to make sure that they had the pieces that they need. And so after we had a great election, I got loaned out to the inaugural committee. When I was in Virginia, I called my stage lighting background and did all the production design for what was called the Jefferson Jackson dinner. I did all the production design for it. I stage managed, because I was the one with the theater background, I stage managed it. So there's some great photos of me next to the different presidential candidates. So
what was next?
So after that, for some personal reason, I decided to get out of DC for a little while. So I went up and went to work as the tech director for a nonprofit, and it just wasn't the right fit. Be the Change was the parent of like the Service Nation campaign, Alan Casey's nonprofit. I love them, made friends with them, and ended up actually working as a consultant to Alan's Senate race later on down the road.
I recently interviewed Emily Cherniak.
Yes, I worked for Emily. Yeah. So Emily's awesome. I love her. I was there for a little bit. It wasn't the right fit. And at that point, I'd still had a really close relationship with Mark and Jim from Van. And so I went over to Van to try to build a digital platform. They gave me a lot of good resources, and we tried to do it. Built a product from scratch in about a little less than a year, and ended up getting something like 25, 30 campaigns and orgs on it.
Was this a website?
Website,
like,
yeah.
Website in a box for campaigns?
Website in a box for campaigns. So, yeah. Tried to have a tool set that was competitive to some other systems, but also very, very deeply integrated with Van. You think about all your projects in the same way. I go back and listen to records that I recorded, and I go, oh, I screwed this up and I got this wrong. Like, I can go back and just do a laundry list of every single little mistake that I made in seeing it, but yeah. I'm not going to do that. Yeah. But it seemed like that was going to be something more of the direction that this next part of my life would go in, into more of the digital kind of space. But then Van merged with NGP. And so all came together at that point, and I stuck around a year. Then after that, I went over to the AFL.
What was your role at the American Federation of Labor Congress of Industrial Organizations?
So my title was political technology director. What my role ended up being really focused on was bringing in new technology into an organization that just the organization. It's an old, longstanding organization. There's a lot of labor.
Things don't move that quickly.
Things don't move that quickly. And I am a fast moving person and definitely ran up against the issues that come from that. Now, I oversaw the development of an entire software platform that we called Repurpose, that the concept was that we were going to add it's a really unique and very cool concept, and like the underpinning technology, I'm really, really proud of like what we did with this. It was on the surface a gamification of activism. And so you were supposed to earn points when you...
Is this union members earning points?
Union members, but it was also open. We did it through the super PAC. So it was open to non-union members as well.
How did that go?
So we found that you needed to have a level of commitment and staff support to this kind of thing. I think there was an unrealistic expectation that if you just built it, it would just work.
And this is something that we see over and over and over, over again. In intersection between technology and politics, yes, where people think that if you build technology, that's the end of the game,
yes,
and it's only the beginning of the game.
That's exactly right. Fortunately, there were some very, very smart people at the AFL-CIO's digital department who did understand that. Nicole Arrow was the digital services director at the time, and Jess Morales was on the team there, and they understood that. And so they put a significant amount of effort during the cycle into driving usage of this platform. The platform itself integrated with three different properties. It integrated with VAN. It integrated with the Amicus tool that we were using for social voter contact. And then it integrated with Salsa, which was our digital platform at the time.
So do you think it had any impact politically?
No.
that's pretty unfortunate, right?
And
if you had to give the lesson from that, like the headline lesson, what is it?
The headline lesson from that is that you have to provide a level of support to any technological investment that you make that will actually make it successful. And you have to have buy-in from the non-technical elements of the organization as well. And buy-in from the people who have the users. You're never going to build something so cool that people are just going to use it, especially in politics. Like, even when you think about the different tools that are out there that have taken off, they're replicating other functionality in a better way. If your voter contact team doesn't use the new tools, it doesn't matter what you do with the new tools. Even if you make people more efficient, even if you make it a better experience, if the people actually doing the work won't use the tool that you provide them, it won't work.
So what happened to that tool?
I don't know. I think they did try to spin it up again at one point, another cycle. And I mean, at this point, it's, you know, we built it in 2012.
What happened after AFL?
I just built this whole custom software project, and I tried to spin up a startup to do that same kind of custom software work. Dockyard, it was already established. Brian Cartarella had established this company to do custom software development. And the thought was, well, I've done these custom projects in my career. It'll be great to do this as a consultant. And
that wasn't a total success.
It was not. It did not work.
I'm curious about your time at Pico National, yes, Network, because it's a group that I don't know much about. You know, it seems to be a relatively important group.
Yes.
What is that, and what did you do there?
So Pico is now called Faith in Action. They try to work within communities of faith on just social justice issues. And like, the work that they do is extraordinary. So they work fighting payday lenders. They work trying to help people who are recently incarcerated reintegrate and get their rights to vote. They try to do work to protect so much of like the folks that the rest of society just forgets about. So they brought me in to update their technology and their data program and bring a different approach there. I am not a religious person at all. I go to synagogue from time to time, but it's not, you know, it's just not a central part of my life in the way that so many of the people there, it is. I did a lot of like voter targeting work for the different elements of their outreach programs, campaign by campaign, you know, and it was usually centered around ballot initiatives and
it was a learning experience.
It was a learning experience. Yeah. And I'm very glad for the time that I spent there. I spent a little over a year and a half there.
15 years is a fair stretch in politics and technology. And one of the things that's changing of late, not totally new, but an order of magnitude different, is there's an entry from a lot more people from Silicon Valley. A lot of that is Trump related because they're concerned, but also they look at this as a bit of a backwater and want to fix it.
Yeah.
What's your view on that nexus?
I know, if you ever read XKCD, the comic, there's this great comic where it's three panels, and the first panel is these two people saying, our field has been struggling with this problem for years and years. And a third person comes in and he's like, I'm here to solve your problem with algorithms. And then they're sitting staring blankly. And then it's like, wow, this is harder than I thought. And I think that perfectly encapsulates the experience of everyone who tries to come into the space and says, I'm going to fix everything and I'm going to do it right away. I'm from Silicon Valley and I'm going to save the day.
So would you say that's because technology is harder to build than they think in this space? Or do you think it's because there's a lot of relationships that get disrupted? Or it's because I've seen this too. I've seen this in technologists coming into presidential campaigns. I've seen it in coming into the DNC. Yep. I've seen it trying to be organizations advising campaigns on technology.
Sure.
It's not as easy as it looks.
No, and it's not a technology problem. And in fact, like when you actually dive under the hood for a fair bit of our infrastructure, the actual tools and resources we're using aren't fundamentally different.
Yeah.
But I think that there is an assumption that the people who are in the space, they don't know what they're doing. They don't understand technology. They're not using.
So what would you advise somebody who's trying to be helpful in the political technology space to do differently?
Well, so there's a couple of things. So the problems that we have are not technology problems. They're political problems, and sometimes they're resources problems.
There's more budget than ever for there that. Is. There's more knowledge that it can be a multiplier. Things have changed.
It is changing. Yeah. But it depends upon where you are and what you're doing.
So what would you tell them to do differently?
The thing that I would tell them to do differently is work with the people who are in there.
Does that mean come talk to Mike Sager?
Yeah, that does mean come talk to me. But come with questions. Don't assume that you're coming with answers.
I've seen a lot of people doing some due diligence and trying to learn the space.
There's definitely folks who I've seen who've come into the space, who come out of the valley, who come out of large money environments, who've been extraordinarily successful. And those are the folks who understand that there's a really good two-way dialogue to be had, and that you can come in and ask good questions and then also be open to being asked good questions. I don't have anywhere close to all the answers in the space. I mean, nobody does.
So is there an example in your mind of someone who got it right?
I'll give a lot of credit to Bob Lord.
Coming in the security space. Is there an example in your mind of someone who really got it wrong?
So there was an org, I'm not going to name them specifically. The founder of the org came, I don't even know whether they were pitching me or whatever, but they had a sort of a productized approach to some support type services. Their model raised some alarms with me as far as campaign finance law.
They betrayed a lack of knowledge about the space.
Yeah, they did.
So Mike, I got to call this interview to an end, unfortunately. It's been really fun to talk to you. I think you have a really interesting career going.
Thanks.
And I am always happy to see someone I saw as a young man, now a father, and a CTO at an important organization.
Thank you. Congratulations on that. Thank you for all the help and mentorship you've provided me.
It's always two directions. So thanks for your time.
Of course.
Have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Yep. That was Mike Sager at Emily's List. I'm glad that Emily's List has someone as passionate about tech and politics as Sager. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.